Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight, and thanks for sticking with us. The Irish Pub with an Irish feel? Well, it's the Gorgeous Gael in West University. Hey, soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gael. Say hello to Peter. It's at 5555 Morningside Drive. You can catch all the best soccer matches from around the world, whether it's a Premier League, La Liga, Major League Soccer, you name it, the Gorgeous Gael has it. By the way, they are home to the Liverpool supporters group here in Houston. Stop in for a pint and a bite. Great whiskey offerings as well. They've got great pub food there. The Gorgeous Gael has an open feel, outdoor patio. It is the place to be. TheGorgeousGael.com. And also let me tell you about Azure Salon in the heart of River Oaks and West Ave Shopping. Now that's where I get my hair done and cut. The stylists there at Azure Salon are the best. And they keep me looking sharp for all my TV work, which, by the way, keeping me looking sharp is not an easy thing to do. AzureSalon.com. I go to Tristan over there. Azure Salon is the place to go, guys and ladies. They've got you covered with colors, cuts, and extensions. AzureSalon.com. Now, Jeff Cameron has been, after starting his MLS career with the Houston Dynamo, has been at Stoke in the English Premier League since 2012. Cameron, one of only three field players now from the United States playing in that league. Earlier today, I had an opportunity to catch up with Jeff. This is part one of a two-part interview tonight. All right, Jeff Cameron joining the show now, and always wonderful to have Jeff on here after starting his pro career here in Houston after playing at West Virginia University and the University of Rhode Island. Jeff, it's late, and I want to thank you for staying up late to do this interview in England.
Always a pleasure, Glenn.
All right, let's get right into it. I want to talk Stoke City right now. You guys in the relegation zone right now, 18 out of 20, a lot of soccer to be played, but I got a sense there's a lot of pressure on you guys.
Yeah, definitely a lot of pressure. I mean, we got 13 games left of the season. We've had some really, really good performances, and we've had not so good. It's been a bumpy road. Probably the toughest season I've had since I've been at Stoke City. We've been too inconsistent times where we needed to score goals, and you don't finish it off, and then the floodgates open. We've given up a lot of goals, but I was dealing with a concussion for about 6 weeks, so that was my first concussion of my career. So I was dealing with that. It's just been a kind of a roller coaster because we have such a good team. It's just we haven't been able to perform, and it's kind of like one of those things where you don't have the confidence, and teams smell that when you play against them. And especially over here, one opportunity can cost you a game, not finishing an opportunity, and then all of a sudden you lose the game. And a perfect example is this weekend against Bournemouth. This past weekend, we dominated the game for about 70, 75 minutes. They scored on their first goal. It was just kind of a miss kick, deflection through a couple of the guys. They tied it 1-1, and then the 80th minute they score another goal and on a free kick, which is not good. But if you watch the game, it doesn't really show the story of the game, and it's just kind of like that our season. But we keep grinding it out. We've had hard training sessions. We're gonna keep working hard, and obviously the pressure's on, but if we get a win this weekend against Brighton, it'll be massive for us, and it'll put us at in 13th place. So we'll kind of jump up the table a little bit.
There was a 12-game stretch where you guys had a real struggle. It cost Mark Hughes his job. What happened during that time period?
It was a lot of things. I rate Mark Hughes. He's one of the best managers that I've played for. He's a great guy on and off the field. But I think it was a few things where I think some players stopped playing for him. I thought, he tried to get into guys a little bit, and some guys didn't react too well. And he wanted the guys to step up a little bit and kind of puff our chest out. And, sometimes some guys react, some guys don't. And as a team, you need 11 guys on the field. And sometimes you were playing with 7 guys. And that was kind of the story for those 12 weeks. With a lot of injuries, guys coming in and out, we never really had a consistent lineup. And it was tough to get the rhythm of the team going. And when those things start to play, you know, in the changing room, things start to change a little bit. Guys get frustrated and, you know, stop playing. Then it comes time where, you know, the club had to make a decision. And obviously, for the most part, a lot of the guys were upset and disappointed. And, you know, it happened. But, you know, I was sad to see him go. But at the same time, you know, you kind of have to just keep going on, keep your head down, keep working hard. And obviously we have Paul Lambert now. And, you know, I played my first 90 minutes underneath him this past weekend and gave me a chance. And, you know, I thought I did well with it and take it. And, you know, I just got to keep doing it, keep working hard. And I played for three managers so far since I've been over here, Tony Pulis and Mark Hughes. And I've played for both of them and I've had a lot of games. So there's no doubt in my mind that I can earn my spot here under Paul Lambert. But it's just kind of the system here in Europe. It's tough. It's ruthless. It's you got to compete every single day. So it's just you gotta keep working hard.
Jeff Cameron, 2012 has been with Stoke. And as we remember now, there are not that many U.S. field players in England right now. There's only three that are getting playing time: Danny Williams, DeAndre Yedlin, and Jeff Cameron. Jeff, let me go back to Mark Hughes. I mean, is there a point where he's not getting through to the players? And we know what a talented player he was. We know that he's been a talented manager. But is there a point where you see it in the eyes of your teammates? Take me into the locker room where, you know, he's just not getting through anymore.
Yeah, 100%. You know, when he calls all guys and, you know, some guys can't handle, you know, some big players that, you know, it's kind of Mark Hughes would have to try to be delicate with them, because if he, you know, kind of crushed them too hard, then they would just stop playing and, you know, stop working hard. And that's eventually what happened. But it's kind of one of those things where, you know, other players are on the locker room, the dressing room, we would say stuff or whatever, like, hey, guys, come on, you know, pull your head out a little bit, or come on, hey, look, we got to work together as a team. And guys stop kind of reacting, and you can feel you can smell the negativity a little bit, and you know, just that bad feeling, I guess. And the attitudes, you can say, like, where guys coming in late, things were getting loose, as we would say, you know, the guys showing up to training late or just doing little things differently.
But wouldn't I say, can I stop you there? Because wouldn't we say that's unprofessional if guys are showing up late?
100%. But it was kind of like one of those things where we manage, you know, Mark Hughes is a player, he lets the players manage themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, like we had team fines, team this, team that, and it was kind of like one of those things where the players can only do so much. And, you know, when guys are calling out other guys, hey, that's a fine today, this and that, guys are like, who cares, you know? Like, yeah. It didn't bother them. And once it stops bothering players and they don't care, that's when they need to go, boom, you're off over to the 23s. And usually Mark Hughes would do that, no problem. But the problem was we were so hurt with injuries and we had such a depleted squad, he couldn't really do that. And it was one of those, he needed every body available. So it was kind of like he had his hands tied a little bit, and it restricted him. And
so he couldn't do the disciplining he wanted because of the injury situation. So it was a whole bunch of things kind of compounding at once.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the thing that people don't really understand. You know, they kind of see it from one perspective. And, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, some guys are carrying injuries. Some guys aren't able to train fully because they're managing injuries. So everything is kind of, you know, you don't know. And you know, sometimes we'd have eight or nine guys training because the other guys are being managed for the weekend because they couldn't train or they picked up knocks. And, you know, especially around Christmas time, you have a game every two, you know, we played on a Saturday, then we played on a Monday, 2 days later.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Hughes pulled me aside and said, hey, I have to play you in Chelsea. You're the only starter we're going to really play. I'm going to play with a 17-year-old kid that doesn't have Premier League experience, another player that doesn't have Premier League experience. And, you know, like, I have to rest certain guys because you know, we don't have the bodies, we don't have the depth to do this right now because we have so many injuries. So, Jeff, hey, I need you to be the leader and the veteran guy out there in the field. And it was kind of like, and he knew it was a tough decision because at that time Chelsea was flying and, you know, they put five past us. But then, you know, we have, 24 hours? Sunday you recover and then you're playing Newcastle at home on a Monday night. So, I mean, it was a quick turnaround, and that's how fast the games come. And, you know, to think that you have 13 games left of the season, it's pretty crazy.
So what does Paul Lambert do now to right the ship here? I mean, does he come in very disciplined? Obviously,
yeah,
everybody's got to come to attention now with a new manager, right?
Since day one, the disciplinary boom is up. Guys don't, you know, he's very strict on certain things. You know, no one's allowed to leave training this time. It's very, very harsh in a way. Like, for guys that are normally very professional, this is a given. You know, making sure you show up on time, this and that, but the fines are more significant. There's more disciplinary actions, if you could say. And obviously puts people a little bit on edge. So I think everybody's kind of, you know, it kind of brings the team together a little bit because you're almost like kind of looking after one another, reminding, hey, make sure you're there on time. Hey, don't be late for a meeting, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
Or, hey, we have a meeting at this time. Make sure you don't forget, you know. And it's kind of brought the team a little bit closer together. The training's been, you know, we had a double session today. We had a hard session in the morning and then a later session in the evening. We're working hard because, you know, we know what the situation we're in right now, and, you know, he's not taking zero effort, because if you're not putting any effort and you're not running, he'll call you out in training and he'll make you do extra runs. So guys are taking responsibility, and he's fine with guys calling out each other. You know, if a guy's slacking off in training, you're only good as your weakest link, right? And, you know, if you want to have a go at your teammate, you do it in a constructive way, but you got to have some thick skin to play out here. And, you know, if a guy's digging you out, you got to take it on the chin and just keep working hard and keep doing what you're doing, you know.
Jeff, does he change the playing style at all?
Go ahead.
Is he changing the purpose of play maybe a little bit? I mean, are there different things that he's implementing now when it comes to the way you're approaching games?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're high pressing teams now. We're pressuring teams that are in the higher parts of the pitch, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Just patterns of play, like, you know, playing from the back or certain patterns of play we work on to kind of give us a base, a style, and then he lets us go from there and be creative in that way. Definitely. You know, we don't want teams to be comfortable. We want to get on them right away. So we're pressuring them in areas where normally you don't really press. But if we're doing it together as a team, and that's what we've been working on, you know, I think we've gotten fitter as a team because of the high press. If we're going to be a high pressing team, we need to be able to endure that and work on that. So since he's been in, he's implemented that, and I think it's been good so far.
All right, so that's part one of the Jeff Cameron interview. The Stoke City, well, we could call him a midfielder, but he's been a defender as well. He has really been Mr. Versatile for Stoke City. Part two is coming up after the break. But before I, one more time, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So that's part one with Jeff Cameron. We're coming back after this break with part two here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. But right now, I want to bring up, what is the DJ Sun Music Pick of the Week? And our good friend, DJ Sun, last week was on the roundtable here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. The DJ Sun Music Pick of the Week is brought to you by theflathouston.com. His pick this week is Haze by The Shacks. Now, DJ Sun, well, he's one of the owners and runs The Flat in the Montrose area, theflathouston.com. It's home of the best local, national, and international DJs, lending to a wonderful vibe. You combine that with the best frozen mojito in Houston, and you've got the perfect setup. Check out the flat, flathouston.com. Get in there. DJ Sun himself will spin in there as well and DJ there. The DJ Sun Music Pick of the Week, Haze by the Sharks. And a quick moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They are the presenting sponsor of this show. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT, 713-322-4878. They are bilingual. Now, whether you're getting an accident that is a car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, you work in a plant, refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to treat your case as if it's their own. It is DaspitLaw.com. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. You got a problem, call them, and you know you're going to have somebody fighting for your right for compensation. They're going to do it for you 24/7, nights and weekend. 713-322-HURT, or go to the Daspit Law Firm website at DaspitLaw.com. John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters. Stay with us. Part two of Jeff Cameron coming up next. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. By the way, it's all happening down in Edo. It's happening at the King's Court. Soccer fans, the real soccer pub in Edo is the King's Court. It's right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins. There's 13 TVs in there. They got a giant big screen at the King's Court. They show the Premier League, La Liga, Champions League, Bundesliga, and they show the Houston Dynamo and MLS there as well. They've got 24 taps. They've got a full bar, extensive selection of spirits, great pub food. I recommend the butter chicken or the curry. Get over to King's Court. Say hello to Jay. Visit the amazing rooftop deck that sits in the shadows of the stadium. KingsCourtTX.com. All right, part two now of Jeff Cameron of Stoke City. Jeff, let's talk about, and by the way, Jeff Cameron joining us here on ESPN 97.5. We really appreciate it. Fascinating interview that we saw in the New York Times called The Carpool Confessional. I just thought this was a great thing. I know you very well, but this allowed me to understand some of your growth in the last couple of years playing in, the toughest league in the world, in the Premier League. You talked about Jurgen Klinsmann. You talked about Bruce Arena. I think there's a notion out there that you support Jurgen Klinsmann simply because you were on a better page with him than Bruce Arena. You were very critical of Bruce Arena in this article, saying he made decisions that cost the U.S. going to the World Cup. Explain the Klinsmann relationship, because that wasn't a buddy-buddy thing, right?
No, not at all. I mean, Jurgen and I have respect for Jurgen. I think Jurgen has respect for me, but there's times where we disagree with each other and he didn't play me and this and that, and it is what it is. But the one thing is, he always rated me as a player because he respected me, and because he knew I worked hard. He knew I was one of the guys that he could look on to when things got tough. Like, I would grind it out for him. But he respected me in a way because I challenged myself, and he always pushed us as an individual to go to the next level, to not be complacent, to keep challenging yourself in every aspect of life, whether it's personal or you know, work-wise. And you know, if you look at the situation with Jurgen getting fired, just look at the types of coaching. You have Bruce Arena who resigned after us obviously failing out of the World Cup, and then he goes on Fox as an analyst. You know, like, what, a month later? And, you know, he's come out and said things. You know, he said he took responsibility, but then he blamed for 35 minutes, blamed bad eggs. He blamed the media, social media, this, and that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I have respect for him, but in the certain situations where he said I wasn't fit enough to play in a game, which was, for me, I took it as an insult as a player.
What did he mean you weren't fit? Like, you weren't physically fit, mentally fit?
Yeah, I wasn't. I don't understand. Fit. He said I wasn't fit enough to. Sorry, that's my dog.
Yeah, what kind of dog? By the way, before you get into that, what kind of dogs do you have?
He's an Alsatian. He's a German Shepherd Malinois mix.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're cool.
He's a big boy. He's about 90 pounds.
Nice. All right, let's get back to Bruce Arena, because everybody's probably going, why did I start asking about dogs here?
So it was just, you know, you look at, he said I wasn't fit for camp. You know, I have emails. I can back it up and say, hey, listen, you know, Jeff, I don't know if I'm going to call you in. If I call you in, I'm not looking to start you or you know, I don't know if I'm going to play you because you've missed a lot of games. And I think I missed two games or three games that month, two Premier League games and one Capital One Cup game. And but then I played 90 minutes against Southampton the weekend before. So if I wasn't fit enough to play a Premier League, you know, if I was fit enough to play for a Premier League game, why was I fit enough to play for a national team game? For me, it was just an excuse. And I said that, and that was the only conversation that I had. We had a meeting with the team and the coaching, and he's like, you know, I don't know if you're fit. We'll keep evaluating you the rest of the week. And obviously he didn't play me. But was I the happiest player to be around? No, 100%, because I want to play. If I was happy-go-lucky player, then I think you would show that it doesn't look like that I don't care that I don't play. And that's not me. It's never been me. I wear my heart on my sleeve. And, yeah, I was pissed off because I believe I'm a better player than some of the guys that he played. But that's my opinion, and he might think that, which is fine.
So now what everybody's going to say, I should ask.
I would have had more respect for him. I would have more respect for him if he said, hey, you know what, I fancy this player tactically or this and that. That it is what it is. But if you say I'm not fit, you're just giving me an excuse. And that's kind of where my problem is with him. And obviously at the end of the day, it cost us, you know, the formation going down to Trinidad, playing a 4-1-3-2, and, you know, in a team that is full of athletes that are run, that they're quick and athletic, when we just needed a point to advance in the next round. Come on. You know, like, everybody was thinking it. Why are you doing this? And the one time you don't change the lineup for two games, you know, that just says it all for me. But if going back to the beginning of the question is, you know, you have Jurgen, who hasn't said anything. He hasn't come out in public and hasn't bashed any players, hasn't said anything. And then you have a guy like Bruce, who's come out, you know, as an analyst, saying certain things. Oh, we didn't have the right group of guys. We didn't have good enough players. This, and that. It was like every excuse. But what? We didn't qualify. But now he's, from what I hear from people talking, you know, that he's got a book coming out. So obviously he wants to stay relevant and stay in the media. So, you know, it's just funny to hear certain things, and it just leaves a bitter taste in your mouth at the end of the day.
Jeff Cameron joining us here on ESPN 97.5. All right, so I want to just go back, because I think my listeners are going to say you have to ask this question, because when Bruce Arena says bad eggs, did you affect the chemistry of the team?
No.
Okay.
No. I think it's just his way of playing to say, hey, you know, this is another excuse. Because he didn't say bad egg. He said bad eggs. So, you know, I have had conversations with other guys still that I talk to. You know, if you call Christian Pulisic, you talk to Alejandro Bedoya, guys that I talk to on a regular basis, they'll say the exact same thing. And after the game, you know, in Trinidad, you have five or six guys, some veteran players, some other guys, coming up to me and saying things, why you didn't play is beyond me. And then, you know, you just look at it at the end of the game, Bruce throws two players under the bus. You know, after the game, if you look at the post-match interview, he throws two of our players under the bus. You know, after a game like that in such a tough situation, usually a coach kind of takes it on the chin and takes responsibility and, you know, backs up his players in a way. Where do you see him backing up his players? You didn't. And, you know, that's where I think guys had, you know, the difference, you know, him saying that we didn't have good chemistry. There was plenty of time to have chemistry. And those are just excuses. We lost to Costa Rica twice. We lost to Mexico. Jurgen had two games. He lost two games. and you had the rest, and we didn't qualify. So I don't have a problem saying it. It's just the fact that I don't need to come out in public and say that I'm not the bad guy, because he's already basically come out and said he tried to blame it. It was me as a bag egg. And, you know, I know that was I the happiest person? Was I, like, joking around and having a laugh? No. But I went to training every single day. I worked my butt off. I worked hard. I performed. And if you base it on training, there's no doubt in my mind that I would be playing. It's just the fact that for some reason he didn't choose me. And like I said, at the end of the day, it doesn't bother me the fact that he didn't play me. It bothers me the way he did it, and the way that he said, oh, you know, I think he wrote a comment, if the stars and the moon and all this stuff aligned, then maybe he would have played. I think it's just hogwash.
Jeff Cameron joining us on ESPN 97.5, Stoke City in action this weekend against Brighton. We really appreciate Jeff coming on the show here. Getting very deep into a lot of things going on with Stoke, with the U.S. men's national team. What I want to know, Jeff, and this is the million-dollar question, from that big resounding win, I guess it would have been on Thursday or Friday, and those next couple days going to Trinidad and Tobago, what happened? Was this a failure in leadership? What happened?
I think it was an arrogance, an ignorance. You know, we were so confident, and rightly so. We beat Panama home, you know, came off of a great win, you know, in Orlando, where the fans were fantastic. The stadium was great. Everything was feeling amazing. I mean, you go down there, and it's kind of, if you look at the history of Bruce and his qualifying, he changed every single time we played a home game, and then we went away. He always changed the lineup, at least 6 to 8 players every single game. The one time he doesn't change, you know, he's made excuses from all the European guys can't handle the heat, we can't handle it, too much travel for us, this and that. You know, he said he should have played the Gold Cup guys against Costa Rica at home. Let me say, you know, I hold my hand up. I didn't have a great game against Costa Rica. But if you look in the 81st minute, I played a ball to Josie over the top, and it was almost a breakaway. Josie misses. It was a great save by Navas, and it would have been 1-1. You know, the 87th minute or 85th minute, I'm still trying to do something. I'm trying to get the team going or whatever. I play a ball, I get caught out, it goes 2-0. At the end of the day, I hold my hand up, and I don't have a problem saying I made a mistake. But at least I was trying. I was trying to help the team. But you can look at every single guy on the pitch and say not one of us had a good game. But to say that you would have played the same team that, you know, played them in Gold Cup is completely false, because Costa Rica had about 5 or 6 guys that, you know, weren't there, their main starters. So it's going to be a completely different team. And that's what I'm saying, like the excuses of, like, oh, you should have done this and that. We didn't have good enough players, this and that. It doesn't mean anything. Because at the end of the day, you go down to Trinidad, the field was flooded before, the day before. It's not a field that is, you know, we're going to play total football on. You're not going to be token passing it around. It's going to be one of those games you're just going to have to, you know, kick it long, grind it out, get a result, and then walk on the plane with 3 points in the bag or a point. But the arrogance of us just going down there and then playing a 4-1-3-2 and not changing the lineup whatsoever and kind of sticking with the same guys, going away from the plan that he's been doing the whole time during qualifying, obviously, you know, I question it. I think a lot of players did. And, you know, if you watch the game, it makes me sick to watch it and see things. Yeah.
Jeff Cameron, ESPN 97.5. So you're mentioning there a tactical arrogance, but was there a taking a foot off the pedal? Was there an attitude amongst the staff and the players that, hey, we've qualified for the World Cup? Was that attitude within the team?
I wouldn't know if it – yeah. I mean, that's a really good question. I wouldn't know if it was just I think our foot was already in the door. I think our foot was already in the door. I mean, I could say that, and being fully truthful of saying, you know, 100% our foot was in the door, because I think it was almost like a guarantee, like we're going to beat Trinidad. You know, we don't lose to them. We always beat them, you know, and it's kind of, you know, people were a little bit more giddy and I guess more lax, relaxed a little bit. But we knew there was, it was still a big game. We just had to win and then we would be fine, or, you know, get a point and we'd be straight. But I think there was definitely a little bit of arrogance. You know, I just remember the feeling of, like, after the game, or, you know, when that whistle blew, I was sitting on a cooler and I was just absolutely shocked. You know, the only thing I wanted to do was just get home, get back in my bed, you know, get back to England and go to a place where I was appreciated almost, you know, where the coach rated me and he liked me, and where, you know, I was going to play. And, you know, I was sitting through a game and watching, you know, almost guys not, you know, it looked like we were going through the motions, and almost, and where if it was a game, I would have stuck in and tackled, and it was a game that we needed to grind out a result. We needed guys to be fight and win the headers and just get stuck in, and you really didn't see that, and I think that it comes from the top.
Jeff, that was stunning, that first 45 minutes, because it looked like somebody put something in the U.S. drinking water. And I'm sitting at home, and I'm going, and I'm sure lots of people around the country were thinking the same thing. They're going, geez, you know, we've always been told and we've always seen how difficult CONCACAF can be. Mathematically, this is not over with Honduras and Panama. So why would anybody go in with the attitude that you're going to the World Cup, or even a half foot in the door attitude, when we all know that things in CONCACAF can get very strange, especially with a team that's being put out that's young and ambitious. And by the way, they definitely want to prove something against the United States.
Of course, you know, but yeah, it was, honestly, it was tough. I remember just sitting down next to Alejandro Bedoya, and, you know, it was just surreal. Like, it was, I know if he would have played, he would have gotten into the game and changed the game. You know, looking at a guy like Clint. Clint came on, created a few chances, hit the post, crossbar. You know, like, he changed the game as soon as he came on. And, I mean, it is what it is. At the end of the day, we're going to be known as a team that didn't qualify. And they can look back and they can watch that game. And that just defines our whole qualifying, the qualification, you know. Some guys were in it to work hard for one another, and some guys were just going through the motions. It was really tough to watch and tough to be a part of, more than anything, and to be helpless in a way. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, you know, I always question why did Bruce bring me into camp then? If he said I was a bad egg or this and that, then why bring me in? Is my question. Why bring me in? Why didn't you call someone else? You left Fabian at home. You know, why didn't you leave me at home? And that's the question. If I was such a bad egg or whatever, why did you bring me in? That's what he alluded to. But it's because, you know, he said to me in a meeting that he looked at me as a veteran guy that people look up to, and which I know is true. And like I said, I let my play do the speaking. If you look out throughout my national team career and my games, I would say I'm probably one of the most consistent guys. And my stats don't lie, because if you look at the stats, you know, possession-wise, interceptions, all that kind of stuff, I'm up there.
Incredible interview there with Jeff Cameron, and how candid he is. Really appreciate him coming on the program tonight. Also, we thank Boniac Garcia for coming on the show tonight. Before we head out tonight, a quick reminder for our presenting sponsor. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They'll bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. We don't want you to get in an accident, but if you do, car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler, if you do, the Daspit Law Firm is going to treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com. They're going to work 24/7 nights and weekends for you. 713-322-HURT or go to the website for advice at DaspitLaw.com. Our podcasts at PodcastArena.com, at iTunes. For Victor Ariza helping us out in studio tonight, as always, one of the greats, along with Jose Partida, our producer. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Hit us up on the podcast again. PodcastArena.com and iTunes. Until next Wednesday, I'm Glenn Davis. Thanks so much for tuning in. And remember, soccer matters.